Good morning. Hey, the audio's on as well. All right, well, thanks for coming out for session one of Tech Ed. It's 8:50, a little after 8. We had needed one more adapter cable up here to get all the machines plugged in. And welcome to the Link conferencing session. My name is Andrew Aronsing. I work for Microsoft in out of Chicago. My job is to basically onboard customers to Office 365. The previous, about 10 years or so, I helped customers deploy Exchange and Link on-premises, and now we deploy or activate those customers in modes such as hybrid or combinations one to Office 365 as well. In this session, we're going to spend about 20, 25 minutes maybe talking about Link conferencing and walk you through the capabilities of Link 2013 and what's different from Link 2010 or OCS 2007 R2, for example. We'll walk through some of the updates that apply in cumulative update version 2, or the last one that shipped a couple of months ago, and then switch to demo mode. Most of the session is going to be spent walking through a Link conference and showing the interoperability with things such as Skype, gear from partners such as Polycom, for example, and doing audio, video, mobile devices. We've got a tablet, for example, and we'll show the interoperability as Link runs across the different clients and what we can do in terms of modalities with Link. So with that, let's go ahead and get started and talk about Link itself. Link has been an application that we've had under development at Microsoft for over a decade. We actually acquired a company back in the late 90s out of Boston, Massachusetts, that did a SIP-based instant messaging application that essentially allowed people to send IMs. That was initially rolled into an application called Exchange Conferencing Server back in 2000. And we realized, however, that this concept of real-time communications is significantly different from Exchange. And having this concept of SIP, or setting up sessions, allowed us to do a lot more than sending instant messages or text back and forth between users. The protocols and the product group behind that was spun out again from Exchange into a real-time collaborations, or an RTC group. That was initially spun out in the first version in 2003 called Live Communication Server. We rebranded that in 2007 to Office Communication Server, and then in 2010 to Link. And Link 2013 is the final, or is the current iteration of that. But essentially, what we have with Link and with going all the way back to these initial versions of LCS and OCS, is this concept of setting up a session. And so we use the protocol SIP to establish this concept of a session and then negotiate between the endpoints what modalities or what functionality can occur. And that could be as simple as text going back and forth over SIP, or we can use that session to then establish an audio call or a video call or a web conferencing session for end users. And so what we've done over the past decade is to take these modalities such as audio, video, and conferencing and make that portable so we can run these across multiple different types of devices. Initially started right with Windows, desktops, and laptops, but now we have Link mobile clients, for example, that extend to Windows Phone, to Android and iOS devices, as well as interoperability with other real-time capabilities such as Skype clients that are out there. We saw that capability ship earlier this year, as well as XMPP-based systems that you may have. And so by taking this concept of sessions and allowing these endpoints to negotiate, we've allowed a rich communications ecosystem that stretches beyond just the Link application itself and now into places such as Office, for example, so we can start sharing directly from an Office application. The goal is really to leverage this communications background inside of Link to be this modality or functionality that enables end users to share what they're doing or what they need to find, as well as to see things such as presence and availability for other users in the organization. So we want users to be in their primary working tool. That could be an Office application, that could be a line of business application. And when they look for questions or guidance on who was the last person to author this document or what was a salesperson, for example, in the CRM system, they should see that presence in the system and then have the option to communicate with that person, whether that be via text or instant messaging, right, a voice call, a video call, or some sort of sharing session where I show my screen or I ask them to show their screen and I get additional data or context around that device or capability itself. We extend that concept of sessions to not just user-to-user or a peer-to-peer type session, but also around the concept of conferencing. So most of today's session this morning is going to be around link conferencing itself, where we talk about what's possible in those conferences. By default, link environments or link servers are going to support all the modalities that we list here. It's up to you as an administrator to sort of policy define which functionality you'd like to restrict or pull back from end users, whether that be from a licensing perspective or a network bandwidth perspective in terms of what's available or capable for end users. We've also added some other capabilities. We acquired a company called Parlano a few years ago. That brings a capability called persistent chat, which is sort of a sub-use case inside of Link. Typically, in a Link conference or a Link session with two users, we're going to have this concept of a dynamic communication stream. So we establish a session, we have that communication, whether it's an audio call, a video call, or a conference, and then at the end of it, we tear it down, and there's no record of that on the Link server side. A user may have recorded it, for example, but from a server side, we don't capture the contents of that session. With persistent chat, we are keeping those, so anything entered into that chat room style experience stays in that chat room, so other people who join that chat room would have visibility to that content over time, and it's persistent, therefore the name persistent chat. Since Link can be used as an audio device, we can use that for pure link-to-link calls or link-to-Skype calls, for example. That allows us to have an audio stream established between users. Additionally, we might have the choice to extend that audio bridge to the PSTN or our PBX environment, and that would allow a Link user essentially to place a voice call, right? So to call a PBX user or to call a PSTN user or a cell phone. Once we enable this concept of audio bridging to the PSTN or PBX, we also then would typically have the requirement for voicemail. Link uses Exchange Unified Messaging as its voicemail platform. It doesn't have its own voicemail system, but it can divert a missed call to Exchange UM. And Exchange Unified Messaging can answer that voicemail or answer the call, record the voicemail, right, and then display that to the user in Outlook or on their device, for example. And so with Link, we've spent this past, let's say, 15 years, right, taking this concept of this session-based communication system and adding functionality, but maintaining the concept of simplicity of administration. So we have a single administrative interface for all the functionality. A single server build. So with Link 2013, we have the concept of a front-end server. That front-end server could be standard or enterprise, but all functionality resides on that front-end server. So that's everything from your registrar, where your clients will go off and register to, all the way to your conferencing functionality, such as audio and video conferencing, as well as potentially things like what we call mediation or the bridge to the PSTN or PBX style environment. So having this single backend, as well as a single administrator interface, simplifies the administration and the capability of deploying Link for end users, and ensures that you're not deploying multiple different types of services or functionality on the back end and leading to some complexity in the organization around interoperability between these different types of components. We also have, from the Link perspective, the single client. So we, with Link 2013, we've added some functionality around client interop perspectives. In the past, typically you would deploy first the server and then go ahead and upgrade the client, as we had a requirement essentially to do a server-first type install. With Link 2013, we made it so that you can have either the Link 2010 or the Link 2013 client talk to the Link 2013 server. If you have Link 2010 deployed, again, you can have either the Link 2010 or the Link 2013 client against a Link 2010 environment. So with a Link platform, we give you some choice, right, around whether you're going to upgrade server first or client first. This allows organizations typically to deploy the Link client in conjunction with the Office client. So as you go to Office 2010 or to Office 2013, for example, you can deploy the equivalent version of the Link client without having that challenge of having to migrate or do a replatform on the server side first. So with that, right, the concept of a single unified client providing all of your functionality, whether that's telephony, audio, video, conferencing, et cetera, and that single server or unified backend that's tied into Active Directory and Exchange, we therefore see Link as that enterprise-grade communication system for people to work with. Most of us at Microsoft, for example, spend a significant amount of our day in Link. Typically, I would say I have between 4 to 6 hours of Link calls per day, right? It's we're on the phone via Link, and we're doing some sort of sharing session, whether it's sharing out an application or watching a presentation that someone's uploaded in the Link environment, and doing some sort of real-time collaboration around that. In general, those are scheduled, but we'll also show you some of the ad hoc capabilities where we dynamically take an instant messaging conversation, right, and add things like audio, video, or sharing platforms to that. So let's take a look. What's a Link meeting? How many people here do not have a version of Link running today or do not have Link in their organization? Does anyone not have? So a few folks going up. For those of you who have a version of Link, how many of you have an office communication server environment? I see a couple hands there. Does that mean everybody else here is running Link 2010 or Link 2013? Who's not running Link 2010 or 2013? Is this just those 6 or 7 hands? Wow, we're happy to see that. So if you're looking at this, right, you're pretty familiar with what a Link meeting environment looks like today. You may have some of the functionality deployed around capabilities for Link, such as conferencing or audio or video. So let's walk you through very quickly, right, what this looks like, and then try to show you or explain some of the functionality and advanced portions of Link as you go through the conferencing aspect. So Link meetings, right, are very flexible. Once you deploy your Link environment, both internally and the edge systems, you have the ability to join those meetings via either the internal network or the external network. Users don't need to VPN in or set up an additional sort of interface to the Link environment. The goal with Link 2013 was to make the user experience more dynamic and fluid and highlight things such as faces and pictures and video, as well as to enable sharing from the Office applications themselves and make it simpler, essentially, for users to try to share content. We additionally had some features in Link that allowed you to customize, for example, meeting IDs, so you didn't have the concept of user, I schedule a meeting from 10 to 11, I schedule another meeting from 11 to 12, and if people join the 11 o'clock meeting right early, they hop on to the previous call. So this functionality has existed to sort of customize that in earlier versions, but we've done in Link 2013 a little more in the interface to enable that sort of, or to enable you or end users to see that they have the option for customizing or making these dynamic or personal ones around that. The other goal, right, is to make these Link conversations feel more human. We support HD photos now inside of Link, and we've done a lot of work in the Link 2013 client to expose this concept of faces and video, as well as simple things such as allowing you to see what your video might look like before sending your video, so that you have this concept of real-time or interpersonal communications. The other goal is we've had a lot of feedback around larger meetings. And so in many organizations, Link is used not just for the 3 to 5 user sort of ad hoc and scheduled meetings, but also for the 1 or 200 person sort of larger calls for the extended department or division or all hands on deck style meetings where we want that a little bit more administrative control over things like mute, unmuting, right? As well as things like questions and lobbies and other aspects around providing feedback in this large meeting style experience. Within Link, our typical recommendation is that meeting sizes can go up to 250 without significant planning on your part. So the default Link install with our server sizing specs would support up to 250 people at any given time. However, we do have a white paper out that describes how to deploy Link or to set up basically a dedicated meeting pool to support meetings of up to 1,000 users. So it is possible also to have larger style meetings with some of the cumulative updates that we'll show and some of the functionality here. We'll have some additional presenter controls for these large meeting support as well. The other aspect in Link 2013 is it's very common for people after a meeting to share, collaborate, or have some sort of note-taking capability. And so with Link 2013, we have the option around OneNote integration. And so having OneNote integration ensures that we can have a shared OneNote experience for people in that call, and everyone therefore has real-time or live edit capability to OneNote itself. That relies on the sharing capabilities of OneNote. So if you've got a shared OneNote on a SharePoint site or internal location or external location accessible by the meeting participants, they'll all have that capability of synchronizing to that OneNote environment and seeing those meeting notes or meeting capabilities inside of Link. And finally, the concept of collaboration everywhere, right? So Link is going to enable you, once deployed, to communicate not just with people in your organization or inside of your network, but also being able to invite people to Link meetings who are not part of your organization. Additionally, we're talking about capabilities such as federation. That could be other, for example, OCS or Link environments that your partners or vendors have, for example, as well as external platforms such as Skype. So you can have these conversations with people who don't have Link deployed inside of your organization. So in general, a lot of benefits. We see Link as being one of the most rapidly deployed or rapidly, the phrase I'm looking for is a rapid uptake in organizations around adopting Link. The benefits from an end user and an organization perspective from enabling this sort of cross-team collaboration and cross-company collaboration inside and outside is a very compelling factor. So let's take a look at what's new, and then let's jump over to some demo capabilities. The first one, or the big one for Link 2013, was the concept of multi-party video. With Link 2010, we had video was limited to the active speaker and the previous speaker. So all participants will see the active speaker's video. The current speaker will see the previous speaker video's feed coming inbound. With Link 2013, we extend this concept of video to be a multi-party video stream. We can have up to five streams going to every individual endpoint. So any user can see five people. That can be chosen dynamically, or individual users can pin specific video feeds. So if I have 12 users in the conference, I, as an end user, can select which five feeds I will see in my video client. So here we can see multiple feeds, right? We see the non-pinned ones along the bottom, and then the pinned ones along top that show the five active speakers. We've also changed our video codec. We used to use a codec called RT Video for Link for doing dynamic scaling. Link 2013 has switched to H.264 SVC, which enables or facilitates an easier integration with other third-party video systems, as H.264 SVC is an industry standard codec. One of the reasons that it took us a while to go to an industry standard codec is one of the purposes, or one of the goals in Link, is not to require a properly or right-sized network with quality of service in the organization prior to deploying Link. Our codecs, both audio and video, in OCS and in Link prior, are what we call adaptive. And so we're sending real-time communications control protocol information between endpoints in a call, whether that be peer-to-peer or in a conference, and then using that to sort of size or dynamically scale the codec up and down. So we're increasing or potentially decreasing the codec and bandwidth utilization and adding things such as forward error correction, depending on underlying network conditions, such as drop packets or latency. And so if we go back 5 to 7 years, we didn't have an industry codec that allowed this sort of real-time scaling during the call itself. It was, we're going to determine what the codec is, and then we're always going to send that amount of bandwidth. And there wasn't the ability to adapt or change during the session. With H.264 SVC, or the scalable video codec, we have the option now to do that. And so with H.264 SVC, we can change the frame rate for participants in the call dynamically and on a per-attendee basis. So by having this ability to do scaling now with an industry standard codec, we're able to adapt that, or adopt that, I should say. And then that obviously will facilitate interoperability with our other video partners. The other options that are included with Link 2013 are things such as the standing and sitting rows, right? So we're going to have the user select or pick who's going to be visible inside of these meetings, as well as things like panoramic video, which we've had possible with things such as the roundtable type device. And finally, video for all. One of the complexities around video is everything around ensuring that end users who have a video endpoint are representing that video experience as clearly as possible. So video is very subjective around things such as light and sound, right? All these have an impact on what the end user is going to see from a video experience, as well as things such as something as simple as centering the camera, right, or ensuring my head is towards the middle or center of that video frame. Link 2013 will automatically adjust for that. So if we have a head off center write, we can have that adjusted at the link level, and we're not going to rely on the user to sit at a certain position or force that environment to be uncomfortable for them. We've also taken some work to increase our presenter controls during the meeting, and I'm going through these relatively quickly because I'm going to spend most of the time talking through these as we actually bring up the demo itself. But with the Link 2013 client, we have the little buttons along the bottom row, and as we hover with our mouse, for example, right, we can see these options to dynamically tune, update, or modify the meeting content. So in this case, we're showing the sharing button, right, and we can show our options for sharing. That could be as simple as show my primary monitor or secondary monitor or all monitors, for example, if I have a multi-monitor setup, or things like whiteboards or polls, upload a PowerPoint presentation, which we'll talk a little bit more about at length, and provide presenters effectively that capability of managing the meeting content and ensuring that they're aware of what all those meeting participants are seeing. So if we take a look, right, we can see when we hover over those meeting option controls, first there's the present option. That shows us what content is being shared out in the meeting. We also have the OneNote option, right, so we can show what do we have in terms of OneNote. Is there some shared notes that are available for meeting participants? And then finally, things such as attachments. It's very common in a meeting for people to request the document or the PowerPoint or it's the PDF, for example, that's being shared out. And rather than emailing it to all attendees, you can upload those attachments to the link meeting and as a presenter determine if presenters or attendees have the ability to download them. So either they can view them in the meeting, right, or they can download them to their local computer as required. The other goal around Link 2013 was to minimize a lot of the information being displayed. The goal here really was to show the content in the meeting and the people, or the focus on the people and content, versus having a lot of extraneous controls visible. The controls are all still there. We'll show you where to find them and how to access them. But we didn't want a lot of menus and options in the meeting, right? We wanted to show the concept of people and content as first and foremost as we went through a link environment. Also, we understand that not everyone has Link, right? We would love if Link was the worldwide standard for all computing devices, and it was very easy, therefore, for people to join and access a Link meeting. But we understand that a subset of organizations are going to have Link deployed. And so when you invite someone else to your meeting, we don't want them to have to install the Link client to gain the full Link meeting experience. And so with Link 2010, we introduced Link Web App. That allowed you to join a meeting and see content, but you didn't have some of the audio and video and full meeting capabilities. With Link 2013, we've had a lot of investment in that browser or Link Web App client. That allows participants to join a meeting, but have the same view and the same controls and the same content as someone who has the full Link client. So if I have a Link 2013 environment, I can invite people to my meetings. They can join via a browser. That browser can be Internet Explorer, Firefox, Safari, Chrome, right? We support all the major browser platforms. And now they'll have the full meeting experience, but just coming in via a browser itself. Additionally, we added some capabilities around the sharing side. So first off, we had support now in link meetings for DRM content. We have a lot of organizations that like to put some policies or restrictions on things such as confidential documents or IP that they have, and now when you're sharing that in a link meeting, we'll respect the DRM capabilities that were applied in Office. We've also changed the way that PowerPoint is rendered or displayed in a meeting. So in the past, the link team had a PowerPoint rendering engine, and when you uploaded a PowerPoint to a meeting, that is what rendered PowerPoint and sent it out via the PSOM protocol to meeting participants. With Link 2013, we realized that we have a PowerPoint team at Microsoft, right? And by having the link team write the PowerPoint coding, we didn't have things such as streaming audio or streaming video capabilities. With Link 2013, we leverage the Office Web Apps capability, which ensures that things such as an embedded audio or video in PowerPoint, as well as some of the more complex animations, will show successfully for people who are accessing that PowerPoint content from one of the other clients, whether that be Link Web App or the Link client itself. So a richer PowerPoint sharing experience by ensuring that we have the folks responsible for PowerPoint, right, doing that PowerPoint rendering and not a separate separate team. We also have the different views. We'll show you these different views as we walk through the demo, which basically allows you to highlight either the meeting participants via FaceWrite or show that sort of larger video for the active speaker or multi-party video along with the meeting content, which may be first and foremost from a sharing perspective. And we mentioned earlier, right, but we also wanted to make sharing something that you don't have to go to link for. If you're spending your time editing a Word document or PowerPoint, you should be able to initiate that sharing directly from Office and just invite the people that you'd like to work with rather than having to go to Outlook, schedule a meeting, right, and then have those folks come in and join. So all the capabilities or the sharing should be as applicable from Office as it is once you've initiated the link meeting itself. There are also a lot of requests to do things such as customize the link meeting invites. Some organizations want to provide a link to their internal help desk, right? Maybe some guidance for end users around link. Sometimes it's a legal disclaimer around content that's going to be shared. So from the link server control panel in Link 2013, we now give you additional options, right, around what you can do around things like disclaimers, or a help URL, for example, that you want appended in those meeting invites. So rather than just the standard, you know, click here to join the meeting, maybe a dial-in access number, some additional organization info that's appended to each one of the link meeting invites in the organization. The other option, and we'll walk through this one in the demo as well, we had these capabilities in Link 2010, but the interface wasn't as clear as it is in 2013. So in 2013, when you schedule a meeting, you have the option for a new meeting space, right, or my dedicated meeting space. My dedicated always has the same dial-in access number and conference ID on the same hyperlink, so that's something I can put in my email signature, for example, and say click here to meet me, and people can join via that way. But anyone who clicks on that meeting invite or dials that conference bridge is going to gain access to that meeting. If I want to have a custom meeting or a secure meeting, right, that it's only available for people on that invite, I use the top one, which is the new meeting space, and I'll create a custom meeting for that particular instance. As well as that, right, we have the concept of lobbies and presenters and how should I limit participation in the meeting. We'll walk through those options as well, but we tried to clarify this dialog box in Link 2013 from Link 2010 to ensure that the meeting capabilities or presenter controls that we had were more intuitive or easier to understand from an end-user perspective. If we do upload a PowerPoint, we have some options as presenters to allow presenters or attendees, for example, to forward through the deck. This is common, especially in the larger meetings, right, where we might have quite a number of people. I personally enjoy this option, as sometimes you're in meetings where you're not quite sure if it's relevant to you. You join the link meeting, you can scroll through the 10 or 20 slides in the session, and you decide quickly in the first 5 minutes, right, is this an hour that I want to spend my time on, or is there maybe a better use of my time because this is less relevant for me and I just happen to be copied on the invite for that one itself. So having this ability to allow people, right, to forward or move backward through the slides without impacting that experience for everyone else on the call allows that end user the choice to sort of free up their time or to come back at the bottom of the hour, right, as the content that's relevant to me is covered. We can also see things like speaker notes, right? So we have the PowerPoint has had the presenter view for several versions of PowerPoint, which shows you not just the slide that you're on, but maybe some speaker notes and slides that are coming up. In link meetings now, we have that concept of presenter view that presenters in the link meeting have as well, so they have the capability there. And as we point out in the bottom right, if we have embedded media files, such as audio or video in that PowerPoint session, we'll be able to play those for the link participants as well. When we're sharing, we do have some restrictions, right? We want those files to be less than 20 megs. With PowerPoint 2013, we've had some questions of why doesn't my media play or what's wrong with my media. There is a file update which will update the presentation in PowerPoint to ensure that it's compatible with the Office web apps and the ability to do streaming via the link environment. If we do video playback, we will automatically mute all participants on the call, so we won't have the sound of someone's keyboard clicking, right, or you hear someone's cell phone ring or desk phone ring as they're in that link meeting to ensure that we have that quality video experience so we don't have some distractions or other aspects there. So the other item that we're introducing this year is something called the Link Room System. We know that there are a lot of video conferencing systems in place today, and we can enable Link to interoperate with those and to have a video call that extends from your Link environment or desktop video to a room-based system. But what we haven't seen is a partner solution that takes the concept of a room system for video and adds the concept of sharing. So I mentioned that I spend a large portion of my day typically on a Link meeting or a Link call. 99% of that, right, is around sharing some sort of content. There's a desktop, there's a Excel file, right, a PowerPoint, a PDF, et cetera, that we're discussing or talking about. The concept of Link meetings is we wanted to take this concept of sharing content, which we really see as the primary focus or the heavy adoption aspect of Link, and enable that to room systems themselves. So with the Link Room System, we take a two-screen solution, and we allow the Link Room System or the Link presenter for this meeting to control those screens and have a choice of whether they want that to be a video conference and or a sharing session, right? So I can put video, on both of those screens, or I can turn one of those screens into a sharing session and therefore show the content on a larger screen that's coming from a different room or from the presenter's laptop, for example. The screens are touch-enabled, so you can flip back and forth or control the aspects on the screens themselves. Also, because it's integrated with Link, the join experience is facilitated for end users. We don't need to know IP addresses or names, right? We're going to, if you schedule the conference room that's got a Link Room System, you can walk into the room that's got the Link Room System, click on join meeting with your finger, and that room system is going to join that meeting. External participants or other Link participants will be joining that just as if they're joining any traditional Link meeting, and you'll have that concept of the presenter view, right, as well as desktop and sharing controls for the Link Room System themselves as well. So with that, let's end the PowerPoint portion. I tried to rush, or I don't know about rush to that. We tried to cover that as quickly as possible, cover some of the highlights, right? But really, we want to show you what's possible in Link itself. So of the folks here running Link, how many are running Link 2013 today? Wow, we like to see that. It's only been a year, right? And we see the rapid uptake. So if you haven't used the Link 2013 client, what I've got here is Link 2013. It looks, if you're familiar with an instant messaging client or previous versions of Link, pretty similar, right? We have the concept of photo, our status bar, and some primary client capabilities. We can create groups, right, of people or buddy lists that we can communicate with. And I can see my contact list. I can see my conversation history, right? I have my dial pad because I do have enterprise voice enabled in this platform, so I can place and receive telephone calls. And new in the Link 2013 client, I can also go here to see my scheduled meetings. So Link can do an Exchange Web Services call against Exchange, and I don't have to bring up Outlook to see my calls. I can see meetings myself, right, and I can view or join them from the Link client there. If I look on my contact list, right, I can see people by groups. I can sort them by status or who is online versus busy versus away, for example. Sorting by status is great when I want to, for example, do a live demo and find some people that I want to have an IM session or talk to, for example. I can also sort by relationship. So Link has the concept, right, of as I click on someone, let's go to, who's in my favorites one here. If I click on someone that I work with, right, and say change privacy relationship, I have this concept of, and I think you'll be able to read a little bit of that, but friends and family, work group, colleagues, external, blocked, or auto-assigned. And so this essentially allows the other contacts what level of access they have for me. So if I move someone up to friends and family, right, they're going to see additional information than if I move them to work group or colleagues, for example. Work group can do everything except for contact me during do not disturb. So if I'm a user that's, or if I set my status do not disturb, people will not be able to contact me unless they're up in the friends and family container. And so by sorting on the relationships tab, right, I can see people who are set to friends and family or to work group or to colleagues, for example. Colleagues is the default option for people inside of your organization, and obviously people that you federate with by default are going to be assigned over in the external contacts container. Link also will show you anyone who's recently been added, so I can see people who recently joined my contact list or buddy list by sorting through the relationship side. On the bottom left is the something that we also introduced in Link 2010, and we now give a little icon around, which is what device do I want to use for Link when I'm transmitting or receiving audio. So by clicking on the bottom left, right, I can choose my computer, microphone, and speakers, or in this case, I've got a classic little Polycom endpoint, right, that's plugged in that provides speakerphone capabilities. When I plug in an audio device, Link will default to one that's higher quality. So my computer, microphone, and speakers typically do not have the most robust sound quality. When I plug in a USB device, Link will switch to that USB device if it's optimized for Link, as it understands that there's some specialized driver support and audio capabilities there. Last year, we had Don from Polycom did a little quick session at the end talking about the concept of certified for Link devices and why you'd like to try that, or why that's important from an end user perspective. The quick summary of that is we do a lot of work to certify devices to make sure that when they're doing, first of all, that the driver is on there via USB, and we don't need to install drivers or do any updates, right? So when you plug in the USB device, we automatically have the driver support for Link. Secondary to that, we also ensure that the device, when doing things like interrupts and capturing audio, is using the appropriate permissions on the top of my head, but what I'm looking for is the CPU utilization. It's properly written so that it captures the interrupts and so that it can do encoding and decoding of audio even if your computer is busy or running at a higher utilization, because it has the appropriate driver support around that. And so from an end user perspective, this is most visible on transmitting audio. Common Link complaint or concern from users is poor audio quality. If I'm using a poor audio device or one that doesn't properly respect some of the interrupts there, I will hear audio fine because it's a low CPU requirement to decode audio, but my encoding of audio is something I don't hear, but everyone else on the call hears. And if that encoding does not get CPU time as required, the other people on the call will hear staccato audio, a tinny audio, some maybe loss of audio and some capabilities there. So having a device certified for Link, right, ensures that the encoding of audio is better, and so the other participants on the call will notice the effect more than you. So you might say, hey, well, Link worked great for me, but the other four people hear poor audio quality. Very likely it's due to a audio or driver device issue on my side of the call itself. If you are enabled for enterprise voice, we can go through and take a look here. We've got, in this case, call forwarding. I can turn it off, right? I can set to forward calls. For example, I've got my U.S. cell phone, right? I've also got my a local number here from Australia that I can forward calls to. So if someone calls me from a Link perspective, that would ring my cell phone, and therefore I have that capability of simul-ring or call forwarding directly at the end user controls. If I click on the call forwarding settings, I can see that I have some additional detail there, right? I can either do it with one click down in the bottom corner to do simul-ring or call forwarding, or bring up the option where I say turn it off, forward my calls to voicemail, right, or do some sort of simul-ring. It's easy for me also to customize how long a call rings before it goes to voicemail and when those settings apply. Is it just during business hours or working hours in Outlook, or is that something that's going to work or apply 24/7? Interestingly enough, we also had some changes around our support for simul-ring and call forwarding. If a user calls my work number, which is a Link extension, that I would expect that that would ring my work voicemail if I don't answer the phone. In earlier versions of Link, what we would do is when we fork a call, right, so we ring my multiple Link endpoints, I might have simul-ring also set up on my cell phone, we're looking for the first endpoint to answer, and that's the one that we will divert or fork the call to. However, if I've got my simul-ring set up right, and it's going to my cell phone, and I'm in an area that's out of coverage or my cell phone is turned off, that cell phone will go to voicemail immediately. And in the past, we would divert the call to voicemail because that picked up, right? And so that was the first endpoint that answered. In our diversion logic now, if we detect that simul-ring or call forwarding is set up, And that Simulring endpoint answers immediately or within a short time span. We assume that that is a mobile device, that that mobile device did not actually ring five or six times, right, that it went straight to voicemail. And so we do not divert the call there. We'll continue to ring the other link endpoints and then divert to their Exchange Unified Messaging voicemail, which is the logic that you would expect. So we've modified or tuned some of the behavior around some of these use cases, right, in Link 2013 to give you that end user experience that you might anticipate going around call forwarding. So let's take a look. Let's see who's online here and see if we can start some sort of calls. I think we had I was looking over here. Give me a moment to bring up the second one as well. And I don't know if they're online downstairs, but what we'll do is find, let's see, who is Mr. Scott Schnoll on here? He's online and busy. Oops, this is the one I want. Hey, Scott, how are you? So it looks like he's online. I happen to know that Scott is working out of a hotel room that has some pretty spotty internet access, and so we're going to test this call over a environment that we know has a degraded network environment, and we will expect some we'll expect poor network. Let's see how the audio and video comes through. Would you be available for a demo? And who else might be online we can ping here? One of the other things that you'll see in Link 2013 is the concept of tabbed conversations, right? So rather than opening a separate IM window for each IM session, I'm opening one IM window and then multiple tabs. You could still break those out if you wanted to additional ones. All right, so let's add some audio here for Mr. Scott. What I have when I'm in my IM session are these controls, right? So we'll see that they're similar on the IM conversations as well as what will turn into a meeting eventually. But we have IM on the left, we have audio or our call one, and I can see which way to call. Do I want to do a link call or call as mobile number or work number? With video, we've added the video preview. So before I start my video, it will show me what I look like. And so if I have poor lighting conditions or a webcam adjustment or the caps on the webcam, for example, right, I have the ability to see that before I go ahead and start the video. And then, of course, the sharing or presentation capabilities. So let's add some audio here for Scott. We'll go ahead and call him via link. So we notice right away one of the other aspects, right, is this concept of people-centric or people-first. People with link. Hey, Mr. Scott, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Hey, that audio is working better than I anticipated. I was a little concerned with the quality of internet there that you had for a while. But you're coming through clearly.
It's pretty spotty here.
Pardon?
It's pretty spotty here.
Yeah, we noticed. So if we drop, we understand what happens. We know that not everywhere we're going to have great network connectivity. But in general, we want the client, right, to adapt to that and still enable some sort of sessions or modalities to be established. Do you have a webcam available on your environment as well? And or could you turn that on? So we'll let's go ahead and add some video. So let's I can start my video. So we can see my video coming in the lower right. Oops, my video cannot be started. Let's try that again. And are you starting yours, Scott?
I am, but I'm getting the same message, so I'm trying again.
hey, there you are.
I do see your video as well.
We had a little hiccup. We'll blame that on underlying network conditions, but we can see video there as well. Let's go back and see if Mr. SV is there. Hello, how are you? Can you do... help? Can you help with a link demo? I think SV might be joining us here as well.
Great.
Let's see if he comes back for us. And if he doesn't, let's get some other folks queued up if possible. While we're in a meeting, we have multiple different views, or in a call or in a meeting, right? We have multiple different views or options that can take place. So we can pick a layout, right? If I look here, we have the speaker view, which is what we're looking at right now. We also have a compact view, which is just the core content, right, or the IM portions itself. So we'll go back to speaker view. That's where we have our video aspects, and I can see the portions there. Let's, right now. let's see. Right out the door. All right, so SV is not available. He is out the door for an appointment. No problem. Thanks for a heads up. It's always fun doing demos from this side because we have in the, let's see, it's 8 a, or 9 a.m. here, so it is 7 p.m. Eastern time, which is around 4 p.m. West Coast time, so we should have some folks online. All right, hey, so it looks like we get to talk to Lauren. Scott, let's bring Lauren in as well. I'll drag Lauren over here to our call, and we'll turn our two-party call right into a video conference. Thanks. Inviting you now. And we should see a multi-party call come up. And here comes Lauren.
Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Lauren, how are you? You're talking
good,
to Scott
how are you?
And I. We're doing well. Thanks for joining. I want to look, you even have a link poster in the background.
I know,
that's,
I do.
That's awesome. We're showing a multi-party video call here at TechEd Australia, and you're coming through clearly. So thanks for hopping on.
Awesome.
So here's multi-party video, right? Let's see if we can bring some more people in. For example, I have federated with an Office 365 tenant that I use, and I happen to know that this other Andrew is online because he's at the computer right next to me. That makes it a little simpler. So here we have, right, a different person. So let's drag the other Andrew over, which is a separate laptop. So I just invited him. Oops, I forgot. That other Andrew is not on the laptop. He's actually on a mobile device over here. But I can see that. And let's mute quickly. Hey, and so now we have a third-party device, right, running the Link 2013 client, but still available and able to drag in or join the call as well. If I go to this third-party device and start my video, we would see my video started here as well. So we should see me joining the meeting. There we are. So here's the other Andrew, right? Here's a mobile device just on wireless running the Link 2013 client, but we have the same capabilities around IM, conferencing, and other aspects. Interestingly enough, in one of our recent cumulative updates, we also have added the ability to see content on tablet-style devices. So let's add some content to this meeting. Let's upload a presentation, for example, or share some content out. We can get a PowerPoint. And let's load our a nice small slide so we can load it pretty quickly. We have a session coming up on Link virtualization. We'll upload this slide, and we should see that content coming up shortly. So we have the same call. We see our Link meeting is dynamically resizing. The focus now is going to be around the content, but we still want to show or enable that multi-party video, right? So the PowerPoint will upload to the meeting. It will take a moment or two. We have some, we're going over wireless here and sending that back over to Redmond. Let me accept the meeting request or the sharing request over here, so I can hit accept.
I'll probably have it ready to go by tomorrow. Is that cool?
And we can hear some background on Lauren's side. But there's our PowerPoint in the meeting, right? We can advance through that. Scott and Lauren can see that as well. And if I come to my other device, I can see that we are loading, and we will see presentation content here in a moment. How is audio coming through for you, Lauren and Scott? Are you able to hear me clearly? And here's our content, right, on a tablet as well. I can take a look through that and see that I have content on the session as well as video as I need to. So there's our sharing capabilities. If I want to see more information, right, we had talked about this concept of meeting options. In my little three dots down here in the corner, I have the option to do things such as start recording. Presenters can always record during a meeting. Attendees, you cannot record. So if I want to limit people who can record, I can make other people in the meeting attendees. That would prevent them from being able to record the meeting. Or, as an administrator, I could choose to not allow users to record meeting content, for example, if I didn't want meetings to be recorded or specific meetings to be recorded. Under Link Meeting Options, I can see what the capabilities are for people joining the meeting. So here I can say who waits in the lobby, right? So in this case, I've invited some people from my organization. They're by default going to be able to join without having to wait in the lobby first. However, if I were to send out a scheduled meeting, right, and had a join link for certain people, I might want them to wait in the lobby while I uploaded the presentation or set up the meeting appropriately as a presenter myself. You also have the option for callers. Do you want people who are coming in via the phone to be admitted directly, or should they wait in the lobby, right? So I can choose that. And I can turn on and off the concept of meeting entry announcements. These were very critical in the pure audio bridge style, right? If I just dialed a conference number and didn't have visibility into the meeting attendee list, we used to like to have the meeting entry exit announcements that would let us know when someone would join in the middle of a call or the lurkers that were there. When you have visibility to the meeting list, right, where I can see the folks who are in the meeting inside of Link, it becomes more optional. In this case, often it usually is something we turn off because it can be a distraction, excuse me, during the meeting itself. I can choose, right, who's a presenter. Is it anyone, no restrictions, anyone from my org, or people that I scheduled, and we'll show you that in a moment. Who can annotate? So by default, presenters can mark up or annotate the PowerPoint sessions. Attendees cannot, but I could change that to say everyone or no one, for example. And then you may have mentioned, or I mentioned earlier, right, the concept of forwarding through slides. You as a presenter also have the option of choosing whether your meeting attendees can forward through just presenters or no one at all, right? Maybe it's some information that I want to take the hour to walk through. I don't want people to advance through the content. I can set that to no one, and as a result, they would not be able to advance through or take a look at the deck in advance. So there's our ad hoc meeting style capabilities, right? If I had some more people here, we could have up to 5 concurrent video streams. The 6th one would drop down to the lower bar, and at that point, I would be able to choose back and forth which video streams I'd want from an end user perspective. So Lauren and Scott, hey, appreciate your hopping on for a quick Link demo. We're going to take we'll cut you free and hop over and show some of the scheduled capabilities in Link. So thanks, folks. All right, so let's close. We'll stop presenting. I can see that my sharing stopped there, and I can close the audio and video bridge by closing the meeting down. I still have the IM capabilities, right? When I click the X here, that will dismiss all of the functionality there. If, for some reason, my call drops, which is common, right, in a poor network or driver-related issues, you will see the option down to rejoin. So it'll say your call has dropped, right, and I can rejoin. If, for example, I'm having difficulty connecting via Link, I can always have this conference or meeting call me, right? So in this case, my work number is Link. That's going to be the same concept, but I could also have the conference call my cell phone. Now I'm joined in via audio, even though I had some network difficulties right where I'm at, but still be able to join that meeting bridge via audio method. So let's go ahead and close out our meeting and come back and look. So that's ad hoc, right? I can take and invite people both inside my organization. I invited the Andrew at AaronSingh.com, which is another user I happen to have signed in on a mobile device, right? The people outside of my Microsoft organization, as well as participants from Skype or what was Windows Messenger, right, is now the merger of Skype and Windows Messenger. Let's go take a look at the scheduled aspects. So we showed you some of the dynamic aspects inside of the meeting. We'll also show you some of the scheduled ones, and we'll wrap it up. And I think we have Outlook running over here, or is it? Yep, it's coming up. All right, fast enough. So let's go to my calendar, right? I'm going to create a new meeting. Let's say that I've got a call coming up, or I want to schedule a call at 10 here. I say new meeting request. When I schedule a meeting in Outlook, I have the option, once I have the Link client installed, to make that a Link meeting. And I think everyone here is probably familiar with this aspect. We've done this from the live meeting days, right? We've had the button there for a while in Outlook. It's very common for users to go ahead and schedule meetings. What end users are not always aware of is once you click that meeting option or the link meeting button, is you have this new button here called meeting options. And this is the one that we try to spend a lot of time evangelizing in organizations, because this is where some of the controls from a presenter or attendee aspect light up. So first one, right, we showed this one in the presentation, but there's the concept of, by default, every meeting I schedule goes into my, we'll call it my dedicated meeting space, right? Every user in the organization has a default meeting location, and I can see that because on my link meeting, the conference ID is 930-9295, and if I hover over this join URL, you may not be able to read it, but it's JQ03DLS9. That's the unique identifier for Andrew Aronson's meeting space at Microsoft. If I make another meeting, so let's make another meeting from 11 to 12, and make that also a link meeting, and we'll put one on the right and one on the left, I can see that both of these have the same meeting ID or conference ID, right? They're both 930-9295. If I hover over, it's the JQ03, JQ0, and over here, JQ03. Meaning that when these are back-to-back, anyone who joins early on the subsequent one, or if the first one runs late, they spill over, right? The participants are joining the same meeting instance in this scenario. If I want these to be unique or separate, I go to meeting options, and I pick for one of them a new meeting space. Once I do that, I hit OK, we can see that the conference ID changes, and now the people joining the second one are going to enter the 85094740, and if I hover over the join link, it's now D4ZF, et cetera, et cetera. So that's making a separate unique meeting instance. So if my 10 o'clock meeting runs long, people joining the 11 go into a separate unique meeting space, and they will not overlap, right? So at this point, I, as the end user, are now controlling the number of bridges or the number of meeting spaces I essentially have. More than just, so that's the first one, right? It's very common for us to see you join the call and, oh, there's already four people on and they're talking still on the previous one. It's not common knowledge to know how to go and create these custom ones to prevent that sort of spillover. But once you do customize it, you also have other options, right? So if you wanted to take some more advanced options there, you can say, who doesn't wait in the lobby? Just me. I want to actually admit individual people one by one or in groups, right, as they come into the meeting. Or everyone from my company gets in or everyone from my organization comes in. It depends on what you prefer in terms of waiting. You also have the choice of turning on, right, the entry and exit announcements, so announcing when people enter or leave. Who's a presenter? In this case, we have to add some folks. Let's say I invite Scott and SV and Lauren and Mr. Gilbert. And when I go back to meeting options, right, I can say choose people I choose as presenters, and let's say that I just want, let's say Mr. Gilbert and I will be the only ones who are presenters in the meeting. So when I send the meeting invite out, everyone who joins, except for John Gilbert and myself, will be an attendee. Of course, dynamically, I can right-click and change people from attendee to presenter during the meeting. However, if I do want to limit the presenters in the meeting, for example, let's say I don't want people to record it, or I want to control whether or not they can forward or fast forward or back up through the deck, right? I have that option when I'm doing the scheduling aspect. And then finally, let's say it's one of the larger meeting styles, right? I can set it to mute all attendees and block attendee video. That will limit or prevent folks who are joining the meeting, right, from using some of this additional functionality. I can also disable IM. What we have found is that in some of the larger meeting environments, right, the IM can be a bit of a distraction. If you have a couple of hundred people, you get people starting to ask questions, and then a whole side channel discussion starts, right, that can kind of distract from the presenter's focus. And so there's rabble-rousers in every organization, and sometimes they like to use that IM channel to get their point across, right? But now as a presenter, I can turn that off. Now they don't have the choice. If they want to start a IM conversation, they'll be doing it on their own. It's not going to display in the meeting portion itself. we're coming up on time. I know we started a couple minutes late, so it's 9:15 at this point. The other aspects that I didn't get a chance to show you here is inside of meetings, we now have the Q&A forum, where we can have a dedicated portion for questions and answers. That was a common request because we had this in the live meeting product and we had not yet brought it back into Link. That has shipped recently, a couple of months ago, so if you apply the latest patches for Link, you'll get that Q&A aspect as well. So one more thing to show, I think, before we pop out. It's not just Link, right? We showed the integration with a... take the right password. With a federated environment, so I showed Andrew Ernsting here, but I can also call Ernsting at Hotmail, which happens to be the device I merged with Skype, right? So here's my Skype account. If I, I'm just laughing because I'm signed into Skype over here, and the wife is calling probably to say hi. She doesn't know that I'm presenting right now. But let's call her. She doesn't know. I don't know if this will be good or bad. So she's on Skype. Let's go ahead and try call. So with Skype, we don't have video integration yet with Link. What we have is IM and audio. And I was going to call myself on Skype over on the left side, right, and show you an audio call. But let's see if she picks up. We can see that she is an external user, right? She's on Skype. She's not responding to IM, but let's try a Link call. Hopefully she's not angry. Oh, she's in another call. She's well, let's go ahead and call. She's probably trying to call me right now. Let's try one more time. And if that doesn't work, I can always call myself on the other computer, and we'll show you that one. She was in Australia a few years ago. You might recognize the. That's her favorite picture. So, all right. So let's go ahead and call Andrew on Skype, who happens to be at this computer. And I can see that Andrew's, I can switch. We did get that working just before. So I can see here, right, Andrew's calling. I answer in Skype. Let's mute quickly so we don't have the feedback loop. And that fixes that. And so now we have an audio call, right, between a Link user, my corporate Link account, and a Skype user, which was, in this case, myself. I didn't have a live external Skype user to show you. But interoperability, right, not just with Link, but also with the Skype platform. So thank you. I'll cut out, but I will be around shutting down for a few minutes. So if you have questions, come on up later. Thanks for coming out. I know it's an early morning session. Welcome to TechEd, and appreciate your time. Thank you all.